Friday, June 1st, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant, independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. With so many hyper-polarized news outlets out there today, both mainstream and independent, it is so important that we constantly evaluate the stances we maintain and always be open to change and new information, even if that new addition reveals that we were wrong. The simple unwillingness of many today to admit that they've been duped, as we all have at one point or another, is one of the biggest roadblocks to actual change. And with the amount of propaganda and social programming that is underway at any given moment in this country, every one of us will no doubt fall victim to it again at some point in the future. Be it for pride or just for fear of the unknown, far too many wake up every day and make the conscious choice to ignore that which calls into question something they've fought for, something they believe in. And until we can put aside our pride, our fear, we are simply playing right into their hands as we fight amongst ourselves. So for the first story of the day, coming from ZeroHedge.com, the Council on Foreign Relations says domestic propaganda is necessary. Now, this is a fantastic article that gets into the idea of what the Council on Foreign Relations stated in a kind of question and answer forum. But it begins by pointing out something that happened about a year ago, which I covered when it happened, which was absolutely hilarious, but at the same time, frightening to see play out. And this was when Stuart Jones, a State Department official, basically was speaking on Iran and their, you know, anti-democratic ways and how they were moving, you know, how they were going to stand against it. And somebody in the press corps asked him a very straightforward question, and it was like a deer in the headlights. The way he just stared at them literally for about 20 seconds and didn't know what to say.
You were over there. The secretary criticized the conduct of the Iranian elections and Iran's record on democracy. He did so standing next to Saudi officials. How do you characterize Saudi Arabia's commitment to democracy? And does the administration believe that democracy is a buffer or barrier or against extremism?
I think what we'd say is that at this meeting, we were able to make significant progress with Saudi and GCC partners in both making a strong statement against extremism and also putting in place certain measures through this GCC mechanism where we can combat extremism. Clearly, one source of extremism, terrorism threat, is coming from Iran. And that's coming from a part of the Iranian apparatus that is not at all responsive to its electorate. Okay, thanks.
And this is... was such an amazing thing to see. And the article makes the great point and says that this is what we fail to see from mainstream media so often, is asking the very obvious questions that bring down the facade. It shows you that their lies crumble with any real criticism in journalism, but we never see that happen. But what the article goes on to talk about, which is very important, even before the Council on Foreign Relations statement, is that about 6 months after Stuart Jones' internal meltdown moment, a leaked State Department memo, which was obtained by Politico, spelled out how Washington merely values the concept of human rights insofar as it can be molded toward propaganda ends. The leaked government memo, made public for the first time in December 2017, instructed top State Department leaders that, quote, allies should be treated differently and better than adversaries. Now, clearly, this is something I think we're all generally aware of, but I doubt many are aware that this memo actually existed that clearly outlined exactly what we thought. And it said, quote, for this reason, the leaked internal State Department memo argued, quote, we should consider human rights as an important issue in regard to U.S. relations with China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran.
And this is not only because of moral concerns for practices inside those countries. It is also because pressing those regimes on human rights is one way to impose costs, apply counter pressure, and regain the initiative from them strategically. And we also always point out how this is a way they, you know, implement sanctions which hurt the people, claiming to be fighting for those very people. It's wildly hypocritical and ironic, but this is something we, again, we generally know. And the real question I always ask myself when I see stuff like this, which is kind of a rhetorical question, is that why is this not the biggest news story of the decade? Well, I think we generally know that, but this shows us two distinct things here. First, that all the high-minded talk from the U.S. about fighting for rights of civilians in other countries is not only disingenuous, but downright sinister, as we see them go on to not only fail to fight for those rights, but take the actions that literally rape, pillage, and murder them instead. And they know this based on what we just read. And second, the one we all likely know, is that mainstream outlets, all of them, who all no doubt had access to this memo, are controlled and not really there to inform you. Otherwise, this would have been spread far and wide, especially by all those who boast of their in-depth coverage and analysis of foreign policy, which this clearly has an insight into what's actually going on. And as the May 2017 Stuart Jones presser clearly demonstrated, this memo means countries like Saudi Arabia and Qatar will always be left off the hook in spite of, for example, U.S. ally Saudi Arabia executing over 50 people so far this year, half of them related to nonviolent drug charges. Or this might further translate into government officials choosing to look the other way when allies illegally possess or pursue nuclear and other banned weapons, like has been supplied to Saudi Arabia in its wholesale slaughter on the Yemeni people, or with the U.S. simply ignoring the nukes of Israel. Politico explained that the memo encourages government leadership on up to the level of Secretary of State, quote, that we should do exactly what Russia and Chinese propaganda say we do, use human rights as a weapon to beat up our adversaries while letting ourselves and our allies off the hook. Now, I think that's very, very important to understand what that truly means and what that reveals. It's something that you'll never hear them admit to, but in their own memo very clearly lays out everything, like our worst fears about their foreign policy. But then it goes on to get into the actual question and answer forum by the Council on Foreign Relations, and it basically, the guy literally stands up and says that he believes that propaganda used on your own people is not only okay, but necessary to maintain the master narrative.
You'll be the last question, but I just want to weigh in on that for 1 second. So there's another word for master narratives. It's called history. Basically, every country creates their own narrative story. And you know, my old job at the State Department was what people used to joke as the chief propagandist job. We haven't talked about propaganda. Propaganda, I'm not against propaganda. Every country does it. And they have to do it to their own population. And I don't necessarily think it's that awful. And this idea news cartel, I mean, there are cartels, but cartels don't have hegemony like they used to. The gentleman right there, last question.
I don't think you all address an issue in terms of understanding what happened in the world. Because what is happening in America is what the United States flipped on the global south and in the third world, which we live with for many, many years in terms of a master narrative that was and still is propaganda.
You know what? I hate last questions. Don't you? I usually just want to end something before the last question. But at any rate, I want to thank this fantastic panel here today.
And he just dismissively goes, I hate final questions. Let's just move on. Thank you, everybody, for coming, and just kind of ignores the question. Just very clearly, again, showing you that when you ask the right questions in these forums, you bring down their facades so easily, and that's what we very rarely get to see. But the fact that we have this kind of propaganda that hides this kind of information, memos just like this, that we know, that are on record, things we've talked about, like I mean, any number of things, like Wesley Clark's discussion about 7 countries in 5 years, or the Project for a New American Century talking about highlighting Iran as to topple the country. I mean, it's things that we've seen for decades that we just seemingly ignore, and the propaganda covers for that. We have to begin to recognize these things and help other people become aware of the fact that they're all right there for you to see if you just know where to look. Moving on to the next story coming from France24.com, U.S. vows to veto UN resolution on protecting Palestinians. U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley said on the eve of a Security Council vote on Friday that the U.S. will unquestionably veto a UN draft resolution calling for the protection of Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank. Haley described the text put forward by Kuwait on behalf of the Arab countries as a, quote, grossly one-sided approach that is morally bankrupt and would only serve to undermine ongoing efforts toward peace between the Palestinians and the Israelis, which is just a gross, deceitful misrepresentation of the truth, which is nothing new from Nikki Haley, but the fact that the Israelis have openly, numerous times stated that the very last thing they want is peace between the Palestinians. And yet here she is putting that forward. It's just clearly the propaganda, exactly what we were just talking about. The vote is scheduled for 3 p.m. today. The United States circulated its own rival draft resolution blaming Hamas for the recent flare-up in Gaza and demanding that Hamas and Islamic Jihad, quote, cease all violent activity and provocative actions, including along the boundary fence. And then Haley went on to state that, quote, the resolution calls on Israel to immediately cease its actions in self-defense, but makes no mention of Hamas's aggressive actions against Israeli security forces and civilians. This is just the fact that, first of all, that she's even saying self-defense. But the fact we have to understand that zero Israelis have been injured in the recent, all that's been going on recently, all the killings of Palestinians, not a single Israeli person has been injured or killed, not one. Yet we have hundreds of Palestinians being killed by live fire during these protests. And yet she still has the nerve to say self-defense. But the point that really frustrates me here is that this resolution is about protecting the civilians. Like, let's just say hypothetically, and I don't think this, but let's say hypothetically, her thoughts on Hamas basically pushing these people forward to cause this kind of a reaction. Let's say that's even the case. The fact that they're saying, because they're doing that, these civilians die and we don't care about that. The resolution doesn't matter because it's about Hamas and that's what we need to talk about. It shows you how little they care for the lives of these civilians involved. It's just, it's very blatant what's going on here. But the reality is, it's shown many times over that that's, I'm sure Hamas does have a part in this. But there's plenty of civilians just simply protesting there that are being openly fired upon. We've seen doctors and journalists, and I've gone over this so many different times, that are being shot, aid workers being murdered, and yet this is what we're seeing by the U.S. It's frustrating, and it's actually insulting as an American to see this Nikki Haley, this person sitting there representing us as if we don't care about these people, when very clearly we do. It's very frustrating to see, and it's, again, just open propaganda. She also delivered a blunt warning to European countries and other council members that choosing to, quote, vote in favor of this resolution will clarify their own lack of fitness to take part in any credible negotiations between the two parties. Really, again, no, just completely willing to basically levy veiled threats at anybody else willing to vote on something that they don't agree with. Just, it's absolutely crazy how we're seeing this play out today. And as if to accentuate this very clear point, another story today coming from antimedia.com, female Palestinian paramedic shot dead by Israeli forces in Gaza. A Palestinian female paramedic was shot dead today by Israeli forces inside the Gaza Strip. The killing took place during continued protests today as Palestinians continue to march with the Great March of Return initiative. The initiative calls on the right of return for Palestinian refugees displaced in 1948 from their towns and villages in what is now Israel. Gaza Health Ministry officials have confirmed that at least 100 Palestinians were injured during Friday's protests from Israeli fire, including 40 people with live ammunition. The point that I take from that we need to continue to focus on is that the Palestinians were driven from their land, and yet now we're somehow supporting the Israeli occupation of their land, and then they're killing them for trying to fight for it. And this pretend, these words like self-defense and peace agreement, it's absolutely offensive to see this take place. And again, we always have to point out that there is a faction of Hamas in this that is clearly taking actions that some may deem terrorist actions. But the fact that they're simply fighting for their own land doesn't necessarily justify the killing of other people, but at least you understand where they're coming from when they're the ones on the defensive. And when you really understand what's going on in Gaza, we're talking about the sea barrier wall we just talked about yesterday. It's the largest open-air prison in the world. The rest of the world very clearly acknowledges that. But yet the U.S. continues to propagandize the situation for very clear political reasons. We have to really continue to draw this information out and push this forward in the discussion. So all the very many out there who argue that some Israel has some kind of God-given right to the land that the Palestinians originally had, or are, which somehow justifies their murdering of anyone else involved on their side, is just asinine, and we have to continue to push that forward. Moving on to the next story coming from ZeroHedge.com, Comey grilled as feds seriously consider charging McCabe in criminal referral. Federal investigators from the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office recently interviewed former FBI Director James Comey as part of an ongoing probe into whether former FBI number two, Andrew McCabe, broke the law when he lied to federal agents. For just before, whether he broke the law when he lied to federal agents. I mean, before I move on, how just right there, how ridiculous is that? This is why I'm talking about this story today. This fact that he very clearly broke the law, but we have to stand back and analyze whether when he lied to them, it gets ridiculous. What makes this interview particularly interesting is that Comey and McCabe have given conflicting reports over the events leading up to McCabe's firing, with Comey actually calling the former deputy a liar on an April appearance on The View. Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz issued a criminal referral for McCabe following a month-long probe which found that the former acting FBI director leaked a self-serving story to the press and then lied about it under oath. McCabe was fired on March 16th after Horowitz found he had, quote, made an unauthorized disclosure to the news media and lacked candor, including under oath, on multiple occasions. And then Comey even went on to say after the fact that he called him a liar, that, quote, good people lie. I think I'm a good person where I have lied. I still believe Andrew McCabe is a good person, but the inspector general found he lied. Kind of just trying to cover for him, but at the same time, throw him under the bus. Very, very interesting. Specifically, McCabe was fired for lying about authorizing an FBI spokesman and attorney to tell Devlin Barrett of the Wall Street Journal just days before the 2016 election that the FBI had not put the brakes on a separate investigation into the Clinton Foundation. At a time when McCabe was coming under fire for his wife taking $467,500, a campaign contribution, from a Clinton proxy. McCabe was found to have leaked information to the Wall Street Journal in order to combat rumors that Clinton had indirectly bribed him to back off the Clinton Foundation investigation and then lied about it four times to the DOJ and FBI, including twice under oath. Now, again, the only reason that I'm talking about this story, and it is important, it's definitely newsworthy to see how this is continuing to play out, and clearly how we've already showed the FBI has thrown both of them under the bus, saying that, oh, that's not what represents the FBI, even though it very clearly is exactly what they do. But this is so frustrating. Why is this still being talked about? The fact that, did he lie or is he going to? Absolutely. Both of them are very shady characters that have demonstrated very clearly their willingness to lean one way or the other based on whichever way the political wind blows in their favor. And it's just very frustrating to see that we're, you know, analyzing whether or not he's in trouble or whether or not he broke the law. He lied under oath, which is a very clear crime, but we've already shown how people like Clapper admittedly did so and nothing ever happened, and the statute of limitations eventually ran out on that, so he never got in trouble. So I'd be very surprised if we see McCabe actually get in trouble, even though he's being thrown under the bus. So we'll have to see how this pans out. I don't personally find this story to be as relevant as many of the other things we talk about, because I think it's pretty damn clear that the FBI and the DOJ are wildly corrupt today and have covered for people like the Clintons in the past. So what new information this is bringing to the table, I don't really know, but I'd love to see them get in trouble. So we'll have to follow up and see what happens. Moving on to the next story coming from ZeroHedge.com, Trump-Kim summit back on will take place June 12th in Singapore. North Korea to denuclearize. Officially, they're saying that the meeting is back on for June 12th, but I mean, we'll have to wait and see what actually happens and what more nonsense the CIA brings to the table, which I still think is kind of all one and the same, where Trump is part of this problem and they're all actively trying to find ways to make this not happen and make it seem like it's North Korea's fault. That's just my opinion on the whole thing. But so highlights from the, quickly highlights about what recently took place. Apparently Trump is now saying that the meeting is definitely back on, but emphasizing that it's a beginning, which is true. I mean, it's not like just having this meeting is going to end all the problems, but again, his comments always seem to give you an insight into what, giving himself an out, sort of. And he went on to say that essentially that he hopes that the war status between the Koreas comes to an end, which is obviously a very great thing, but doesn't necessarily seem to need the U.S.'s involvement. They've already kind of discussed that. So I think maybe that's his way of, sticking his finger in the whole thing and saying that he's part of it. Again, this is my opinion, and I'm basing these things off of my perception of Trump thus far, which pretty clearly shows that he's manipulated the information at hand to make himself seem like he's part of this whole thing, as well as just his foreign policy all over the world has shown that he's just another puppet in a long string of presidential puppets. Again, my opinion. The next thing he says, it would be a big mistake if they didn't have the meeting with Kim, which I found very interesting because they were the ones that just pulled out of the meeting. So, yes, I agree it would be a big mistake, but I don't know what he's trying to say right there. It's like they just pulled out of the meeting. So to say it would be a big mistake not to have it, it's like everyone's like, yeah, exactly. That's exactly what we've been saying. So have the meeting. And now they're clearly doing it again. So he also, this is an interesting part here. Trump got a letter from the North Korean envoy that basically was a peace letter from Kim himself saying, discussing what was going to happen. And Trump said it was a, quote, very nice letter. And then Trump went on to say that the relationship between North Korea and the United States is as good as it's been, which is kind of a funny statement because it hasn't really been that good. So maybe that's what he means. Again, kind of just this political doublespeak nonsense, where it's like, how do you really take that? It hasn't been good, so it's no better or worse. What a milquetoast comment that is. And then Trump went on to say that the transformation in North Korea can take place with Kim as a leader, which I found particularly interesting to note on, because this very administration, Trump himself, not too long ago, pointed him out and really painted him as a bloodthirsty, illogical maniac. And really, that just has to show us how much they're willing to manipulate perception to progress their agenda in the moment. And which we should also consider in that regard to everything that's going on moving forward, that they're just willing to bend this however they want to make it seem like it's working. Now that Trump clearly wants to look like they're going towards this meeting, well, I think this is possible with Kim there, even though they just called him a maniac months ago. But interesting to see that go forward. But noting on that same letter part, which is definitely interesting, and I don't know how this is to be taken, because this could very clearly be summed up as just the media's misrepresentation or some kind of a manipulation taking place. But right after this, Trump went on to say that he hasn't opened the letter yet, which is weird because he just said it was a nice letter and that it was a very interesting letter. But who knows how that can be taken. Maybe Trump was taken out of context, which the mainstream media does all the time, or he spoke out of turn. I mean, who knows what happened? I'm not reading too much into that, but I think it's really the point we should take away from this is it's propaganda. All of it is meant to lead us in a certain direction. And I still maintain that I don't think the meeting will probably happen. That's my guess, but it may still happen if they feel cornered into it. But people like John Bolton and Pompeo want nothing more than to see North Korea bend the will of the United States with nothing from the side of the United States. So we'll have to see how this takes place. I think even if this meeting goes forward, I never think we're going to actually see any progress there, and simply because of the U.S. foreign policy as it stands. But you may want to also see this as Trump, taking a step away from that kind of thing and maybe possibly recognizing that he's being handled by people like John Bolton. That would be a fantastic thing. I'll always hold out hope that Trump is the person they all want him to be based on everything we have to see from before. I would say that's probably not the case, but we can always have hope. Moving on to the final story of the day, coming from ZeroHedge.com. Prepare for action. Cryptic emergency alert sparks panic for Oregon residents. Yet another glitch in the government's emergency alert system sent out a cryptic warning to residents living in Salem, Oregon, and the surrounding areas. Now, this is like the fourth or fifth example of this in a very recent period of time, all kind of stemming back to the one in Hawaii, which was a very big deal, claiming to have an incoming missile, which, we've pretty much demonstrated pretty clearly that there was something fishy going on there, and that this was seemingly a test to see how people would react. And that's, I think it's pretty obvious. There's been some other cases that happened since then that you could go one way or another on, but this is beginning to show a very clear pattern. As shift plans, Mark Slavo details, the head of Oregon's emergency management agency has since apologized, but that was too little too late after many were left in a state of panic. The cryptic emergency alert was forced out to cell phones in and around Oregon's capital city, displaying the words civil emergency and prepare for action, but carrying little other information. Andrew Phelps said late Tuesday that a technical glitch had cut off the crucial information in the alert. They claimed there were elevated levels of natural toxins in the local reservoir. Children and people with compromised immune systems have been told not to drink the tap water in the Salem, Oregon area after an algae bloom caused the spike. So let's break this down. Civil emergency, prepare for action. What could possibly follow that would make sense in regard to toxins in the reservoir? I mean, I'm sure you could come up with something, but my opinion, this was a very clear psychological operation in regard to gauging the public's reaction to messages just like that. But the fact that you can claim a technical glitch cut off the crucial information, isn't that just the easy catch-all of the day? Technical glitch, whoops, we sent out a very cryptic, weird, ominous message that makes no sense in regard to toxins in the water supply. I mean, we've seen these things happen many, many times in recent years, and it just has to give us some insight into what's going on. And with things like this taking place, it's hard not to feel like something's coming, like a shift is on the horizon. Be that a good or a bad shift, it's sometimes hard to tell. But with the drastically changing world stage, especially in regard to the United States, and the quickly intensifying authoritarian measures being implemented in this country, it's hard not to feel anxious about where we're headed. But I truly believe there are a lot of good people out there doing all they can to make sure that shift is in the right direction. And the absolute worst thing you can do is nothing. So get out there, share your thoughts, enlighten those willing to listen, but also be open to their thoughts as well, and the possibility that you may be wrong, that I may be wrong. Because if we are not willing to stand back and be open to that possibility, then we're no better than those who bury their heads in the sand and ignore the truth around them. But the simple fact that we're willing to entertain opposing ideas is a sure sign that we're on the right track. And it's hard to argue with one who only presents the facts in a discussion, and then in response calmly absorbs the irrationally emotional attacks of those unwilling to look outside their carefully cultivated box. And to the casual observers, it's clear which is the independent thinker. And in doing so, you've just added another critical thinker to the side of rational thought. So do not worry about the future. Simply look to the battle in front of you and spread the truth. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or the independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.